Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lord of the Manor by Avon Ellis, narrated by Andrea Ems. Chapter 1. Peacocks.
Amelia,
my dad says, heaving a heavy sigh as he picks up his bone china coffee cup.
We've been over this many, many times. No peacocks.
I'm telling you, people love them. They would be a beautiful addition to our gardens. People will take pictures of them, and those pictures will end up on connectivity story shares and Instagram with the hashtag SwallowHedgeEstate. It will drive traffic to our website, and it will drive tourism to the gardens.
Why do I care if we have more tourists? We have plenty in the 2 months we have the gardens open. If I truly believed peacocks would bring in more, then that is the last thing I would ever want.
I do my best to tamp down the frustration building within my chest. Let's see. I've been back in Dorset exactly, 1 day, and I'm already feeling restricted. What this estate really needs is more than peacocks, but if I can't even get some birds, there's no way my father, the Duke of Bridgewater, one of the wealthiest men in Britain, will ever concede to my ultimate idea. I want to open more than our gardens to tourists. I want to open our home. Dad goes back to reading on his phone, and I remain lost in my thoughts. I glance out of the windows that overlook our gardens. Roses are in bloom, topiaries are full and green, and the rain falling from the sky on this gloomy June morning drops onto the leaves and into the fountain. I watch the droplets land on the water, and I can practically hear the sound of it in my head as the water ripples with each raindrop. Soon the tourists will be here, no matter what the weather, to take in the exquisite beauty of the Swallowhedge estate. I've spent the past year in London with Mum. She hates the country and tries to limit her time here, and I've returned full of ideas for what I'd love to do to grow Swallowhedge. I have to say, attending the royal wedding of Christian and Clementine, now the Duke and Duchess of Oxford, has inspired me to take a look at my longest-held dream. The career I'd love to have, what would make me happy, a dream that has remained my closely guarded secret, and one I've only shared with my best friend. I would love to turn this estate into a top wedding venue, and have a wedding dress boutique on site. I pick up my English breakfast tea and take a sip from the delicate cup painted with birds and flowers. The warm liquid slides down my throat, and I gently place the cup back on the saucer. The fact that I'm drinking a cup of tea in a room that has its roots in the 1700s, overlooking magnificent gardens that my ancestors have walked for hundreds of years, is not lost on me. I absently run my fingers around the rim of the cup. In my exploration of every nook and cranny of this 100-room house, I found one room full of magnificent china, gorgeous cups and saucers and plates dating back to the 1800s. They don't belong in a dark room. They should be set upon a table for people to see. Not just my family, but for everyone. I continue to think about Swallowhedge and my dreams for it. I understand that I have grown up with extreme privilege. The family legacy was secured with previous dukes, who invested heavily in land in London. My family owns some of the most expensive properties in the entire city, whilst other aristocrats have struggled to not only maintain their homes, but to merely keep them. We have never lacked for the funding to keep this house running. And that's the problem. Unlike other estates, which have opened their doors to tourists and activities to pay the bills, we don't have to. But I don't think it's right. I continue to gaze out at the manicured grounds now bathed in rain. I would love to open the home to visitors, to share the rich history I have had the honor of living in, to let people breathe in the art and magic that is held within these guarded walls, to teach all aspects of the past, the good and bad, to share the stories of these people. I can see school groups coming here for educational activities, visitors taking in the splendor of another age. And oh, this would be a glorious place to have a wedding and celebrate the start of a new life. There is something so romantic, so magical about two soulmates coming together to share vows of love. Soppy, I know, but I've always felt that way about love and marriage. Then there's my passion for fashion and wedding gowns. Ever since I was a little girl, I have been obsessed with brides and their beautiful gowns. That only intensified when I began watching Say Yes to the Dress, that TV show where brides find their wedding dresses. I never dreamt of being the bride. I wanted to be the shop assistant who helped them discover the magical dress for one of the most important days of their lives. I love fashion. I love the way it can make you feel, convey a message, be an expression. It can be a powerful thing. A few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to pick out a whole new wardrobe for Princess Isabella York, the sister of my best friend Liz. I wanted her to embrace her curves and show them off, and since she is a princess and stepping into the public eye now, I'm delighted when I see her photographed in an outfit that makes her feel happy about her body. That is what dressing people does for me. It makes me happy. It's rewarding, helping someone feel good and special about themselves. And I can't imagine a greater joy than helping a woman find the dress of her dreams for her wedding day. But my mum has told me a million times it's not a career a Westbrook woman should have. I'm reminded that I'm Lady Amelia Westbrook, hailing from a long line of aristocratic women. My title is special, she says, and certain responsibilities come with it. Mum does charity work and goes to social events in London and stays at our family home there, whilst Dad spends most of his time here. I frown as I consider that their time apart seems far greater than their time spent together ever does. But I quickly bat that thought away, as it makes me uncomfortable if I allow myself to examine it for too long. My brother Harry, who has no interest in running this estate or being in charge of it one day, abruptly packed up his stuff a year ago and went off to South Africa to be a tour guide. A wry smile passes my lips as I take another sip of tea. Of course, that whole situation has been branded as sowing his wild oats, and my parents believe he will eventually come to his senses and embrace running this estate, which he has threatened to hand over to the historic trust when the time comes. Over my dead body will I let him do that. The irony is, here I am, actually in Dorset, passionate and ready to take on this estate and make it thrive. I want to share the history of this home with people. I want to tell the stories and show the portraits and antiques and have people experience the past on a visit to Swallowhedge. So many homes are open to tours and making a concerted effort to cultivate special event business, like Morton House, which will be inherited by Viscount Brookstone, otherwise known as Philip Coventry. I saw him at the wedding, and he's doing so much work on behalf of his parents, who live in Italy most of the year. His house does an incredible job in bringing in tourists, and I know Swallowhedge could do so much more than open the gardens 2 months of the year. But I'm not to worry my ladylike head about these matters. I take another sip of tea. I'm supposed to do what my mother does, and what my grandmother did before her. I'm to do charity work, go to all the A-list social events of the season, be a patron of the arts. There's nothing wrong with charity work. I love the charities I support, and would gladly do anything to help them. But I want to be more. I want to grow a wedding business here on this beautiful estate. If only someone would give me a chance to prove myself. I put my cup back down and allow myself to daydream. We could turn one of the rooms here into a luxurious bridal salon, with vintage seating and glorious mirrors. I could keep the gowns I acquire in another room in the house and display a select few in the showroom, along with veils and accessories. I, of course, would be dressed in all black, blazer, pencil skirt, extremely professional and modern, so I wouldn't distract from the bride in any way. I would get to do the best bit, flicking a magnificent train, just like they do on Say Yes to the Dress. Of course, I'd ask the bride if she is indeed going to say yes to the dress. Okay, so I'm stealing that from the series, but they'll never know. I can see myself dealing with the opposing members of the bridal entourage, too. I wonder how much of that is played up for good television. Regardless, I would handle it. And resist the temptation to take a card that ranked a dress as a one and rip it up and call them an idiot for ruining a bride's magical dress shopping day. I can't even begin to count how many times I wanted to do that whilst watching the show on TV. Or take the card and smack an annoying entourage member over the head with it. Yes, whilst I would never actually do that, of course, I have to say I'm rather in love with that idea in my dreams. I turned back to my dad. Dad? He looks up warily from his phone. I want Swallow Hedge to be so much more, I say.
Peacocks won't make the estate more.
No, not the birds. You know I think it should be open to the public.
I don't want strangers traipsing through our home,
Dad asserts. But we don't even use the parts of the home that we would open to the tourists, I point out. It's not like you sit down in the drawing room and admire the paintings on a daily basis. Most of the furniture in the staterooms are hidden under protective cloths, and that is a shame.
We don't need the tourist trade like other houses do.
No, but this house is full of history that should be shared. Dad sighs heavily as he picks up his fork and spears a piece of sausage.
Amelia.
I know, I'm exasperating him. But now I'm wound up, and my head tells me to keep going. What about getting the certifications to host weddings here? I ask.
Weddings?
Yes, we could host weddings and receptions. The garden cafe kitchen could be used for that. We could host beautiful weddings in the gardens. The picture gallery would be a wonderful spot for weddings or receptions. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have this house pay for itself instead of out of other funds? I wait as he chews his food. I almost consider it a victory that he hasn't spit it out in horror yet.
Amelia, you don't know how to run a business like that.
We could hire someone to manage it, which would be contributing to the economy, I say. An events manager and coordinator. They would return the investment. Then that would free me up to run a bridal boutique on site.
A boutique? Good God, I need brandy for my coffee this morning,
Dad says. My brain is still going, and I don't stop it. I need to get my dreams out on the table. Yes, I'd like to open a boutique here on the estate. It would be part of the wedding experience, and something unique to Swallow Hedge. I'd invest in some vintage gowns, but I'd also use my connections to see if we could be a stockist for the dress designers for the royal brides. I bet Clementine could get Amelia Wentworth Hay dresses for me. I could hire a boutique manager, and I could work as a consultant and buyer. This is my dream, Dad. I would return every penny and then some if you invest in me. I know I can. I stop speaking. I know I've made some bold claims, but I know I can achieve them. I've researched this. I've seen what other estates make on weddings. It's a massive market. But with our breathtaking venue and the unique bridal boutique on site, I know we'd get the clients. I know this is a lot to consider, and
I'm not considering.
Please, I plead. These are my dreams. I love this home and the land it's on, and I want to work here. Please at least think about it.
No, I will not. You're a young woman. You are speaking of things that will cost a lot of money, and you have no business experience.
I have a degree in economics from Oxford. I think I'm capable of not only managing numbers, but learning, I challenge. I will put my heart and soul into this, I promise you that.
Absolutely not. You're also forgetting that this is going to be Harry's estate one day. He might not want this to become a tourist trap, with coaches pulling up the drive on the hour.
Anger surges through me. Harry, I spit, hates this house and the responsibility that comes with it. So much so he ran off to another continent to escape it. Dad stares at me. He knows that is the truth, even if he doesn't dare admit it. I love this house. I want to share it. Is that such an awful thing? I continue.
Yes, I can't imagine anything worse,
he says, picking up his fork and taking a bite of his eggs. I throw my napkin on the table and jerk upright out of my chair. Dad's eyes widen in surprise. I'm so tired of being the only one who truly cares about this house, I say. I have ideas. I have dreams. Nobody will give me the chance to execute even one of them, like getting a damn peacock, which wouldn't hurt anybody. Now my dad is looking at me like I'm a complete stranger. Perhaps I am. I've never fought for my dreams before, not like this. Maybe seeing Bella be so brave in stepping out of the shadows has inspired me too. I have good ideas. I'm ambitious. I'm willing to live here in Dorset and work hard to see them through. And if this family won't use me, I'll find someone who will. I pick up my plate and storm off into the kitchen, startling Marina, our chef, who drops her knife in surprise as I fling the door open angrily. Good morning, Amelia, she says. Good morning, and I'm sorry I startled you. I apologize.
Please, let me get that.
Sergio, our butler, says, quickly stepping into action to take the plate from my hands. I thank him and immediately exit the kitchen, heading for the main staircase. I hear the rain pick up overhead, but I'm not staying in this house a second longer. Granted, there are 1,000 acres and a ridiculous number of rooms in this house, but still, I don't want to be here. Suddenly, a bolt of crazy inspiration strikes me. Wait a minute. I could bring my idea to another estate in Dorset, one that actually cares about cultivating business and sharing their history with the world. I think this person might be interested in my ideas, especially if it brings in more business. I head back upstairs to my room, and I catch a glimpse of myself in the mirror. I have no makeup on, and my hair is pulled up in a messy ponytail. But if I reach Lady Violet Banfield this morning, I'll rectify this before meeting with her. I grab my bag and fish out my phone. Violet is a year older than me and is looking for ways to make Wintersmith Hall a key tourist destination. I pause for a moment. I spent a lot of time at Wintersmith Hall the summer I was 18. However, I wasn't there to see Violet. I was there to see her twin, Nicholas. The past reaches up and grabs me, which is so stupid I can hardly even stand myself. But memories are a tricky thing. Sometimes they come up and take root in your heart, even when you don't want them to. Like a bad weed, you can keep yanking it out, but it's determined to come right back up and annoy you all over again. This would be the hardest part about working with Violet, and at Wintersmith Hall, if her family likes my idea. There would be no avoiding Nicholas. And the wound I worked so hard to heal could rip wide open again. It's so ironic. When I was 18 years old, this would have been my dream, working in the same place as Nicholas. Now, it's something that I will have to fight through if I want my career goals to come true. I sink back onto my bed, my hands gripping the edge of the mattress as my heart begins to hurt. I was madly, deeply, completely in love with Nicholas Banfield. We had always known each other, of course, as part of the same aristocratic set. But the summer I turned 18, he came back from his first year at Cambridge, and we reconnected one night during a party at Wintersmith Hall. This time, when we met, sparks flew. We spent all night walking the gardens, getting to know each other in an entirely different way. The night was magical, with the full moon and crickets chirping and the scent of roses from the garden perfuming the country air. We stayed up until the early hours talking. Then Nicholas asked me out for breakfast the next day. That began a summer where we did everything together. We'd ride horses, talk about what we thought our futures would be, go down to the sea and walk along the shore, letting the waves crash over our bare feet. We'd argue about what we were going to binge-watch on TV together, debate what ice cream to get at our favorite ice cream shop. We were friends, but my heart knew it was more. I was falling in love with him. He was mature, already thinking of his future life managing Wintersmith Hall and what he wanted to do with the property. Nicholas could make me laugh until my sides hurt. He was kind, thoughtful, like noticing if I was cold and offering me his hoodie if I needed it. We could talk for hours or say nothing at all. It always felt magical, right? And I was sure he was falling in love with me, too. Until that one horrible night in August. It broke my heart, and I've never looked at Nicholas the same way again. I angrily rip the weed out, not wanting to go any further in my memories. Some things need to stay dead, like memories of Nicholas. Those memories will remain dead so I can coexist with him. Lord knows I will never, ever fall in love with him again. And if this is the path to launch my career, so be it. I take a breath of air to clear my head and get back to why I was thinking of him in the first place. Violet, his twin. I remember talking to her at Christian and Clementine's wedding reception about her bringing some new ideas to Wintersmith Hall. Nicholas, the fool that he is, was turning them down. But if I dared him with this idea, if I told him he was too chicken to do anything that involved me, I think he'd do it. Nicholas would hope I failed, but he wouldn't back down from a challenge like that. I'm not opposed to using this tactic. It would help me, and it would help Violet, who was eager to sink her teeth into new projects to grow business. And if my gut is right, it will help Nicholas too. I'm willing to overlook that annoying fact for the greater good, however. I text Violet. Hi, Violet. I'm back in Dorset. I've been thinking about our estates this morning and what we talked about at Christian and Clementine's reception, so much so that I have a business proposition for you. Are you around this morning? Would you have time for a chat? I hit send. Then I pace my room, mentally willing Violet to be up and attached to her phone. A few minutes later, she replies.
Hey, Amelia. Wonderful to hear from you. I'm intrigued. Come on over. I'm manning the gift shop today. The entry code to the gate is 7181.
I smile as I read her text. Brilliant. Also, this is something that people would find amusing about the aristocratic life. For all the glamour you think it has, appearing in society and going to A-list events, some of us live another life, like working hard to keep estates within the family, which means doing things like manning the till in the gift shop, like Violet, or trying to find your way in an archaic-thinking family, like I am. I quickly head into my wardrobe and pull out a black jumper. I layer it with black trousers. Then I go to the mirror and style my hair into a top bun. I put on my makeup, doing all neutrals, so I look professional. I head out of my room, walking down the hall, passing magnificent works of art that have been in this home for hundreds of years. I pause before taking the old servants' stairs, which will lead me down to the boot room, where my raincoat and wellies are, and look at one of the portraits. It's Lady Camille Westbrook. I see some of myself in her, as she has the same black hair and green eyes that I do. From the family history, I know this portrait of her was painted in 1815, when she was considered a spinster at age 20. Not only was she scandalous for rejecting suitors' proposals, but she was an author. Her books are in our library downstairs. I bet the Westbrooks tried to stifle that too, I think, as I study her picture. Camille, I will not be stifled, just like you refused to be, I say to her portrait. I've been out of uni for a year, and I haven't done anything but daydream about what I want to do. I promise you, that ends today. I'm ready to take a chance, and I'm ready to gamble on myself. If you can send me any good vibes for what I'm about to do, I swear to you, I won't squander them. I pause for a moment. Why do I feel more support from her portrait than I do my own family? My family, I think with determination, need to see they are wasting my talents. I head down the stairs and end up on the ground floor, making my way to the boot room. I take a seat on the old wooden bench next to the door and retrieve my wellies, tugging them on. I slip into my camel trench coat, grab an umbrella, and step out into the pouring rain. Lord, it's chilly today. It feels more like autumn than June. I reach my Volkswagen Touareg and close my umbrella, putting it down on the footwell of the passenger's side and slipping behind the wheel. As I leave our house, I still can't help but feel moved by the privilege I have of living here. This beautiful home full of art, sculpted gardens you can wander in for hours, acres of rich English countryside to roam. My determination continues to rise. This is my heritage to protect, to grow. I want to show people all the amazing things here, from the architecture to the paintings on the wall. I want people to find happiness in the fountains and blooming flowers. And for couples to start their journeys of a lifetime with weddings here at this special place. I'll prove to all of them I can do it, I think, as I turn onto the country road, even if it starts with helping another family first. I begin the drive to Wintersmith Hall. One thing I love about Dorset is the varied scenery you get. There's the gorgeous English countryside, hills, valleys, quaint villages with cobbled streets and cottages. But go in another direction and you're at the coast. There's so much beauty to be found, and this is why I adore it so much. As I spent my school years in London, I always craved coming back out here for summers and holidays. I've lived here nearly every summer since. Before my dad put a big old rejected stamp on my ideas, my plan was to make a go at life here. I've been in London for the past year, doing as my parents wanted. I did charity work and attended events. I was lucky enough to be able to hang out with Liz and the squad, what the young members of the royal family call each other, and their inner circle of friends. But Liz's life is changing. She's engaged to Roman Lawler, a gardener at a stately mansion in London. She's busy as a working royal, doing what she wants to do. It's time I stop waiting for my life to happen and make it happen. And today is going to be that day. The windscreen wipers keep a steady rhythm as I drive up and down the hills, taking my time due to the weather. But soon, Wintersmith Hall comes into view. I still get a sense of awe looking at the Jacobean manor every time I see it. Hills covered with trees loom behind it, and wisteria blooms over the walls at the front of the house. The best part, and what would tie beautifully with my plan, they conduct beautiful weddings here. A few years ago, the Banfields invested in renovating an old stable block into an events venue. There are several rooms certified in the house for weddings, too. Best of all, there is a small church located on the property. It dates back to the medieval period, and it has been used for weddings. All things I would be doing for Swallowhedge if I were allowed. Except for the church bit. We don't have a church. But you know, all of that without the church part. I drive up to the private entrance and enter the code Violet texted me. The iron gate swings open, and I drive around to the back of the hall. I park my car, grab my umbrella, and walk towards the visitor entrance, where the gift shop is located. I reach the small shop, which is housed in a cute stone building with a thatched roof. Violet has the door propped open, letting the cool breeze float into the shop. Tourists aren't due for another hour, when the estate officially opens, but she's already working. I close my umbrella and lean it against the stone wall. "Good morning," I say cheerfully. Violet looks up from folding tea towels. Her copper-colored hair is hanging loose around her shoulders, and her blue eyes sparkle in greeting. Whenever I think of her being Nicholas's twin, I'm always struck with how different they are, as Nicholas has caramel brown hair and brown gold eyes that remind me of the color of whiskey. Not that I'm thinking about his eyes in that much detail, of course. I just remember that about him. "Hey," she says. "I have to say, your text was a surprise this morning." "You know, it was to me too." I walk inside the tiny shop, which is filled with an abundance of tea towels, herbal soaps, and mugs and dishes. Classical music floats in the background, and a candle flickers next to the till. Based on the super sweet vanilla scent wafting through the air, I'd guess the candle is labeled with either the words cake or buttercream. "Come round and have a seat," Violet says. I move around the till and sit on the stool behind it. I know this is strange, me coming.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?